Good afternoon. Welcome to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. My special guest today is a radio show host himself, or an internet show host. His name is Tom Cryer. In fact, his show comes on immediately after mine at 2 o'clock Central Time. But I've had Tom Cryer, attorney Tom Cryer, on my show previously, back when I was at KCXL in Liberty, Missouri. And if you want to learn about the federal income tax, today is the show to listen to, and then following my show, listen to his show, because this man has researched it as thoroughly as anybody, and he is an attorney, has a memorandum out available, and we'll tell you how to get a hold of that during the show, and you'll just get a wealth of information today. So if we have Tom there, we'll go ahead and begin. Tom, are you with us?
I'm right here. How are you doing, all Peter? Right.
I'm doing just fine. How's the weather down there in Shreveport?
It's beautiful today. We've had a little hit and miss, but it's just been a terrific spring. It is hanging on for us with moderate temperatures and really nice weather. Makes me wish I still played golf.
Well, we have beautiful weather up here in Kansas City, Missouri also. It's cool and a little bit too cool, in fact, for given that the swimming pools are about to open. Well, Tom, you... as you say on your YouTube explanation, somebody approached you with some information, some claims, if you will, that the federal income tax didn't apply to most Americans. That is, that they weren't subject to a federal income tax liability several years ago. And probably not unlike many attorneys, you immediately were, scoffed at that idea, if that's a correct characterization. Said it can't possibly be true, and then began looking into the issue yourself. And maybe you can just take us kind of through the your story and bring us up to speed of where you are now and what's going on with you.
Well, basically, that's it in a nutshell. A friend of mine approached me, and it's been more than several years ago. It was about 13, 14 years ago. During a lunch, we're having lunch, and he mentions to me that the income tax is purely voluntary, was his understanding at the time. And of course, he had more information than that, but that was the basis of, that's what he was informing me of, is that there's no liability provision. There's nothing that requires people, to file a return and pay taxes on their earnings, and that since it was voluntary, he was going to quit volunteering and quit filing tax returns. Scoff is your word. That's a good word because it's charitable to my reaction.
Okay.
I actually told him that I was worried about him, that I felt like he needed to see a shrink. And I was more worried about him too, because I knew that he was taking on, in effect, the most powerful and the largest and the most dangerous organization in the world.
Right. Otherwise known as the United States federal government.
That's it. And, a lot of people don't distinguish between the government and their country. A lot of people think that, my government is my country. No, your country has a government, and that government is just run amok. Right. It's gone nuts. And, The more that it gets away with, the bolder it becomes. And the more helpless that we are, the bolder it becomes, naturally, because they're not afraid of us anymore.
Right. Whatever happened, if I may ask you, to your client that came and introduced this information to you 13, 14 years ago?
Well, this was a friend, and he has since adjusted position and tried a few things, and right now he's still... in the movement, he is still actively participating. I'm not really at liberty to say what he has done.
Okay, sure. Well, sounds like the music's there, and so Tom, you know what that means. We have to take an early break here. So, folks, stay with us. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. We'll be back here in just a couple minutes with Tom Cryer.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Welcome back, folks, to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is your host, Peter McCandless. My show, I call the Peter Mac Show. Today is May 26, 2007, and we have Tom Cryer on the line with us today. He has his own show, so I would encourage you to continue listening today after the conclusion of my show at 2 p.m. Central Time, and he will just continue right on to his show. But I'm really grateful that Tom is willing to be on the air 4 hours today instead of the usual two, so that we can get some information out to you about what he has researched. And as we were just saying before the break, he had a client come to him some 13, 14 years ago making some claims that that is the client, was not liable to the federal income tax for various reasons. And Tom, as he said, charitably as scoffed at him. That was a charitable characterization, according to Tom, and then began doing his own research. So, Tom, maybe you can take it from there with us.
Well, basically, I set out to save my friend from himself. And I told him, I said, look, I will dig up the liability provision. You know it has to be there. It can't be overlooked all this time, something that like that. And I will find it for you. I'll show you where, so, you know, and you'll resume your filing and you'll resume, you know, staying in good graces with this monster, you know. Mm-hmm. And because even back 13, 14 years ago, I mean, it was apparent that you know, the federal government had already become an 800-pound gorilla. It had already devolved into a an oligarchy that was totally, you know, immune and insulated from public will. It didn't really. So at that particular point, I began doing some research into the statutory provisions of the Internal Revenue Code, and figuring I would very readily find the provision, point it out to him, and it would all be over. It didn't happen that way. He had provided me some materials, which I had reviewed, but didn't mean a lot to me because, you know, in law school, we're not really trained on the constitutional aspects of taxation.
Mm-hmm.
Although we study constitutional law, taxes don't have any sex appeal like First Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment
right.
issues.
Sure.
And so that's where the attention is focused. So, you know, I'm kind of getting my feet wet with this while I'm digging into the statutory to show him the law. And as I dig in, I not only don't find a liability provision, but I find some serious anomalies in the code, things that just don't make sense. Back up a little bit, give you a little bit of background on me. My first position when I left law school, I was an honor graduate from LSU Law School. And order of the coif. And so I was sought after from a lot of sources. But at that point, you can't practice law. So one of the sources that grabbed me up was right there at the LSU Law Center, and that was the ongoing constitutional convention that Louisiana was using to redraft its state constitution. And I was more or less drafted in as a special advisor and draftsman for the Constitution, with my emphasis being on what we would call Bill of Rights, what we call Declaration of Rights, which was the first article of the Constitution. And it paralleled or mirrored the Bill of Rights we have in our U.S. Constitution. And in doing that, you know, I obtained a great deal of experience in drafting. And then over 33 years of reading, and in the interim, I've done a lot of drafting for ordinances, statutes, whatnot, for particular groups and interests. And I know a little bit about how you draft statutes, and I've never mm-hmm. seen anything like this before in my life. I mean, this stuff was really eerie. It was not just anomalous. It was past that to eerie. The very first section of the code points out the tax is hereby imposed on taxable income. Of, and then it lists out these different types of, quote, individuals. Individual is not a typical term of art. Person is, but individual is not. So why are we talking about individuals? And then why is a tax imposed on an inanimate object? With an inanimate object, taxable income cannot, you know, pay a tax. The tax can be imposed on that is a subject of the tax. But it also has to be imposed upon the person who is liable for it. Every tax law has to contain three clear and distinct and plainly laid, the courts like to call it, provisions. One is what the subject of the tax is. In this case, it's taxable income. Two is the amount of the tax, so that you can know what you are liable for or what the amount is to be paid. Mm-hmm. And three is who is responsible for paying that tax.
Mm-hmm.
In the Internal Revenue Code, they only have one out of three.
They mentioned taxable income, right?
Now, that's on the income tax. Now, on all of the other taxes, there are another 25 or so federal taxes in the Internal Revenue Code. Every single one of them spells out exactly what the subject of the tax is, exactly how much the tax is, and exactly who, what set or class of persons is liable for the payment of that tax. But the revenue code in subtitle A, which is the income tax law, mm-hmm. only sets out the subject of the tax. And the subject of the tax even is odd because it's taxable income.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question comes in, how do you define taxable? Now, we don't have a definition of taxable. We don't have a definition of income. We have a definition of taxable income, which they say in Section 63 is gross income minus deductions.
Mm-hmm.
But then that doesn't really tell you what taxable means, and it also doesn't tell you what income means.
Mm-hmm.
And now, there's a good reason for that, because those terms are really constitutional terms. Those terms are defined by the Constitution. Able to tax, taxable, means within the scope of the taxing authority of Congress. And income doesn't mean what comes in. Income means gains and profits, according to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. If Congress could define what is taxable, they could just say taxable is everything. Mm-hmm. But the Constitution doesn't allow them to tax everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could define income, they could say income is anything that comes in, regardless of where or for what.
Mm-hmm.
And that would allow Congress to set their own constitutional limits by defining the terms. So that's why we don't find those terms defined in the code.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, am I making any sense for that?
Yeah, sure. And maybe if we could just clarify for folks. So the Constitution, you correct me if I'm wrong, basically permits two kinds of taxes, a direct tax, which has to be apportioned, or an indirect tax, although the Constitution doesn't use that term. The excise duties and imposts is what we collectively refer to as indirect taxes, and those have to be uniform. And numerous Supreme Court decisions around 1918 to 19 early 20s very clearly said that the 16th Amendment, which is what the IRS hangs its hat on, did not give the Congress any new taxing authority, correct?
That's correct. It says that it did not bring in any new subjects of taxation that were not already within their grasp. In other words, all that the 16th Amendment did, according to the Supreme Court, and this was in 1916 with Bruschaber, was that the 16th Amendment prohibited the consideration of the source of the income in determining, in categorizing an income tax, a tax on only income, as being a direct tax requiring apportionment. It did not say Congress now has the power to tax something it didn't tax, have the power to tax before. Congress has always had the power to tax income.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But those powers were limited by its constitutional scope of its jurisdiction, of its authority. And then that was clarified even further back in 1819 in McCulloch v. Maryland, not the first tax case, but a very important one. And that was where the Supreme Court held that the taxing authority of any sovereignty is coextensive, was the word they used, with their regulatory authority, their sovereignty, their jurisdiction, or whatever you want to do it. Now, jurisdiction is a dangerous term because it can be applied in so many different ways.
Right.
But its sovereignty, the scope of its sovereignty, the range over which it rules, is also the limitation of its taxing authority. It can't tax what it can't rule.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go back and look at Article 1, Section 8, and that tells you what they're allowed to rule.
Right.
Now, if you can't find your activity under that, then that's beyond their taxing authority.
Right. And then there are also numerous, I believe, Supreme Court decisions, aren't there, Tom, that say if Congress doesn't have the authority to regulate something, in other words, it's outside of those 18-19 duties that are 18-19 powers that are in Article 1, Section 8, then they cannot acquire that power simply through taxation. So I like to say Congress can't tell you, you know, doesn't have the authority to tell you you can't paint your house blue. Maybe there's some other authority, you know, local zoning laws or something, but Congress can't tell you you can't paint your house blue. Well, they can't also come along and say, okay, if your house is not blue, we're going to charge you $1 million a year. That would be acquiring the power through taxation, which they don't have. And Supreme Court decisions, I don't have them in front of me, have said, no, you can't do that.
Well, the primary one on that, and the granddaddy of that particular line of cases, is Bailey v. Drexel Furniture Company.
Right. Okay.
And in Bailey, that was concerning a tax on the use of child labor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Supreme Court held that child labor and issues of labor are strictly within the state's reserved police power.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government has no authority over labor and or labor issues, and that this was merely an attempt to extend their regulatory power by issuing a penalty on the use of child labor. And so
right.
They knocked it down.
Right. We'll be back here, folks, to clarify that. Hang with us. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Tom Cryer will be back right after the break.
stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
PersonalArms.com has all your self-defense needs. PersonalArms.com carries the highest quality law enforcement grade pepper spray and sells it at true wholesale prices that start at $6.95. Check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. This electronic watchdog sees through walls. Electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com/RBN. That's www.personalarms.com/RBN or call 1-201-641-1442. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning RBN when you place your online order. We will not sell items prohibited by any state, county, or local law, so check your laws before making a purchase.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is May 26, 2007. My special guest on the line with me is Tom Cryer, attorney from Shreveport, Louisiana, who, as you'll discover as we get into the show, has taken on the federal government because they have attacked him and for his understanding, and I think that's the correct word, not just belief or view, but actual understanding of the federal income tax laws. And he will continue with his show at 2 o'clock, so you get a full 4 hours of Tom Cryer today, which I think is just an unbelievable privilege, and I feel privileged just to have him on my show today. This is the kind of information, folks, that you won't hear on other radio or internet networks. And so this Republic Broadcasting Network does not survive by contributions or support from any corporation. We survive by support from the listeners. So if you can make a donation to the Republic Broadcasting Network, that would be great. And there are a number of ways you could do it. One is to simply call 800-724-2719, extension 15, and pledge a certain amount. You can also go to the website, which is www.republicbroadcasting.org, and make a donation via PayPal, or you can send a check to RBN 1015 South Mays Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Now, this information is available at the Republic Broadcasting website, so if you go there, type /hosts/callers.html. You can pull up this information. So there are three ways. You can call 800-724-2719, extension 115. You can simply go to the website and make a donation via PayPal,
or you can send a check via snail mail to RBN 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas. Round Rock is two words, 78664. Because, again, you're not going to get this information through the mainstream media. It's just they're not going to entertain this information. And we find that pretty sad, but fortunately, people like Tom Cryer, who have an enormous amount of courage and dedication to the cause, and as he will tell you, just frankly, his duty to support the Constitution, and that's why you're going to hear this information. So, Tom, you were explaining following up with a particular case to illustrate what I said, that is, prior to the break, that Congress doesn't have the jurisdiction simply to do whatever it wants. It has very specific defined powers, and it cannot extend those powers via some taxation or some tax law that it might want to impose. And Drexel versus Bailey, I think, is the case that...
versus Drexel. I may have said it backwards, but it's Bailey versus Drexel family, Drexel Furniture.
Say it again for us, please.
Bailey versus Drexel Furniture.
Right, Bailey versus Drexel Furniture. Okay, and it was about, had to do with child labor laws. But anyway, the point is, correct me if I'm wrong, the point is they cannot extend the powers that they have in the original Constitution by simply saying, okay, we're going to tax that, which we normally don't have the ability to regulate. We'll tax it. We'll regulate it sort of through the back door via taxation.
Well, you've seen an awful lot of that in other areas. For example, Congress has defined interstate commerce and has gotten away with it, but actually that's not valid. It's up to the Supreme Court to define what is interstate commerce. The definition of the terms of the Constitution and the scope of the Constitution is not within Congress's purview. Now, on these cases, I know we're calling some names and we're even giving some dates, but of course we can't give string out and bore everybody with citations.
Right.
But there is the memorandum that you referred to earlier that's been circulating on the web, and it's had a tremendous draw. I mean, the demand for it has been really encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
But it is available free, absolutely free. All that they have to do is go download it and save it. It's in a PDF file, and it's mm-hmm. on a web page that was donated to me by a client and friend who is a webmaster and a server.
Right.
And they can go, if you don't mind my giving that.
Absolutely. Give it several times.
Lie free zone, one word, as in lie free meaning no lies allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Liefreezone.com. They can go there, and I'll give you a hint because the download button on the file is hidden strategically by the webmaster just below the donation section of the page. So if you just click donations and scroll down a ways, it's right below the PayPal button down there. And just download the memo and click that and save it, and it's. But that memorandum sets out everything on the statutory side of the issues as to what the law says and does not say and what it must say in order to have effect. And it also sets out the issues relative to the constitutionality, the limitation of the taxing authority as to what is taxable income that is taxable by the federal government.
Right.
And the statutory side goes into some of the historical provisions that shed a lot of light on the things that are hidden by the redefining of terms and the adoption of different terms and provisions that occurred in 1954 whenever they reshuffled and renumbered the code from the 39 code. But all of that's in there. There's some like 100 cases cited. 68 or 70 of those are Supreme Court cases that are still controlling.
Right.
And so any of the cases we discuss today, you'll be able to find in that memorandum.
Right. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, Clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Well, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. It's just about 12:33 here Central Time, and my special guest on the phone with me is Tom Cryer. And Tom was just giving out his website where you can obtain the memorandum that we're going to be referencing and have referenced already. You can go to his website, and that's www.gcstation.net /. Lie Free Zone. Again, www.gcstation.net, C as in country, station.net / lie, like the opposite of the truth, Lie Free Zone. You can also email me, peter@petermaxshow.com, and I can send you a PDF of the memorandum that we're referencing. So you've got two ways there you can access it.
Well, and an even easier way, a gentleman in Oklahoma, we had borrowed a page from underneath the donor's domain, my webmaster's domain, and that's why it's GC Station. But a gentleman in Oklahoma noted that the domain, Die Free Zone, was available. He bought it and linked it into that GC Station URL. And so now all you have to do to get there is just to rattle in LifeFreeZone.com and go.
Okay.
And so just LifeFreeZone.com will get it.
Okay.
But that's great.
Okay. And so just to recap here, because this gets complicated, and I'm trying to each time simplify this and clarify for our listeners, Tom. So what we have is a federal government with limited powers. We have Supreme Court cases namely Bailey versus Drexel Furniture Company and probably others that clearly say that Congress cannot acquire new powers or extend its taxing power, extend its regulatory authority or its jurisdiction, if I can use that term, via tax laws. And you have found, looking at Title 26, otherwise known as the Internal Revenue Code, that Congress has very deceptively used terms in ways that would imply one thing to the typical non-legally trained reader, which in fact quite mean something quite different when one delves into the code. Is that correct?
It's deceptively crafted, very ingeniously deceptively crafted. Either the guys who put this are absolute idiots or they're absolute geniuses. I find it very difficult to accept the fact that these folks are stupid. They're not. And what basically they've done is that they have used misdirection the same way the magician does to make you believe that the terms aren't what they mean. For example, the taxes on taxable income. And so they give you a definition of the combined hybrid term, taxable income, as being one thing, but really what they're taxing is literally taxable income. And they put that in there. They, you know, I point out in the video that I've got on YouTube, and if I can plug that, if you go to YouTube and just search Tom Cryer, we have a four-segment video there that lays out a lot of this in general terms, but it lays it out. And that has been getting a tremendous response. We've had it out for a little over a week, and it's already had almost 3,000 views. Mm-hmm. It's got a five-star rating across the board. So, you know, the thing that we point out there is that if they could have taxed you, they would have taxed you, but they couldn't, so they didn't.
Sure.
Now, the taxable income means taxable income. It doesn't mean taxable income, single term. And when you look at the code and it points out, and I pointed out on the video, is that if you were to corner the government and make them admit that that not all that comes in is income and that not all income is within the taxing authority of the federal government, they would have every right to respond, look, don't blame me. You filled out those tax returns. I didn't.
Right.
I told you. At the get-go, all I'm wanting to tax is your taxable income. If you put in there income that isn't taxable, is that my fault? On the other hand, too, we've also, in statutes and in regulations both, we point out that not all that comes in is income. And we've also pointed out that you're allowed to deduct that from gross revenue or gross income, although it should never have been included in the gross income to start with if it couldn't be included. But they point out in the statutes and in the regulations that some items of income cannot be included in gross income and should be deducted.
Right.
But they don't tell you what they are. They also tell you that, and the word exempt is a Supreme Court case, the word that the Supreme Court used. John Marshall was the writing justice in McCulloch. The word exempt is meant by the Supreme Court to mean that it is beyond the taxing authority. It cannot be taxed by the federal government.
Right.
And the regulations point out, hey, there is such a thing as exempt income. But all they tell you is what is not exempt. They don't tell you what is.
Right.
But they do tell you there's exempt income. So the government could say, hey, we told you some income's exempt. We told you some that comes in is an income. You know, what do you want us to do, you know? Slap your hand? Of course, it would be a lame excuse for a deception. It's like the con artist saying, hey, you know, I did throw an oar in there and you just didn't catch it.
Right.
But, you know, it's all there. It's all in black and white. And if you just look at it and say the law is a law, you have to come to the conclusion that the income tax doesn't apply to 99% of us.
Right. And let me, if I may, Tom, and certainly correct me if I misspeak here about the law or draw some incorrect logical inferences, but going back to, you know, what Larkin Rose is uncovered with the 861 evidence, and I know that's included in your memorandum. If you look at Section 61 that says gross income includes all income, and then it lists wages, da-da-da, and then it says taxable income is generally gross income minus deductions.
That word generally is
But then it sends you to a section that says the taxpayer's taxable income from sources within or without the United States will be determined here. I believe that's one point.
That's exactly right. And that's why the statute only says generally.
Right.
Now, on the, that, and the very first thing they tell you in 861 in the regs is that you know, some items cannot, and the word is cannot, not should not, may not, cannot be included in gross income. Well, if those have to be deducted, why do they include that in the first place? That also tells you that 61, which defines gross income, includes things that cannot be included in gross income.
Right.
So that tells you 61 is invalid.
Right. In fact, it tells you, I believe, and I can't do the citation here, but that may be a blessing for the listeners, that gross income includes classes of income which may be exempt, excluded, or eliminated for federal income tax purposes.
Right. Now, the position of the IRS is that unless it's statutory exempted, then it's not. But the fact is, what is exempt and what is not exempt is determined by the Constitution as well.
Right.
Exempted, meaning I am forgiving the tax liability on that income, is statutory. But what is exempt is a constitutional issue, and Congress doesn't have the right to define the Constitution. Now, when you back up to that 61 again, you want to take a look at another little anomaly. The things that the IRS and the courts continually and repeatedly overlook is are the two words derived from.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they say derived from whatever source or from whatever source derived income, you know, derived from whatever source, including, and then it says compensation for wages. Now, that's a whole lot different from saying that or compensation for services.
Right.
That's a whole lot different from saying that compensation for services are 100% income.
Right.
That all that says is what income, profits, gains are derived from the compensation. If I hire you for $50 to go fix a window for Mr. Jones, and I charge Mr. Jones $75, I have derived profit of $25 on those services, on that compensation for services. Now, you've received 50, but that's your gross income. Now, I received 75, but that isn't income, is it? Only the part above and beyond what I gave up in order to get it. Well, what about you? What did you give up in order to get it? Can you deduct that? The only thing that the IRS contends, only receipts, gross receipts, that the IRS contends are 100% profit, are those for services you personally rendered, whether for a wage or a salary or for a fee. And where's the authority for that? There isn't any. There's absolutely none.
Right.
So, you know, how do they argue that the only way you could conclude that is if you were to conclude that your services were worth absolutely nothing, that the day you gave up out of your life and the day you gave up out of your work lifespan were worthless. And that means that you're worthless, or you have to conclude that they own a piece of you.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they're taking something from you. They can't tax your property, and your labor is your property.
Right.
So if only 1% of your wages is accountable for what you gave up in order to receive it, then they're taxing that 1% as property, and that comes under what you pointed out at the beginning of this hour, comes under the taxation of property or direct tax. It has to be apportioned among the states. The bill can't be sent to the individual, for the person. It has to be sent to the state. And it has to be done on a yearly basis, year by year by year. It can't be done as a running tax. So that's why they have to do that, to get around these corners.
And yet, when a person goes to trial, as I was a witness in Larkin Rose's trial, and I saw his wife prosecuted and convicted, and his friend Tom Clayton is serving 4 years. When people find them, and Dixon Cannon there in the Northern District of Texas, I was at his trial. When people find themselves in court and trying to present even you know 1% of what you've just presented here in the first 45 minutes of this show, they're cut off at the knees, metaphorically speaking. They cannot get this information in front of the jury because the prosecution, the Department of Justice, knows that if a jury hears any of this information, they're going to begin to doubt the guilt of the person who's on trial, and the Department of Justice cannot allow the truth to get out. They have to continue to stamp it down.
I don't want to sound critical, but a lot of those things that you're saying, while they're true, are not because these are an impossibility, or these raising these points and getting these points made is an impossibility. The fact is that they often are introduced improperly. And okay. What basically they do is, and the case of Ed Brown, bless his heart,
right.
Is a good example. And again, the case of Sim Cannon is another example where they went in and attempted to prove the law
right.
to the jury. Now, you cannot try the law to a jury. You have to try right. facts to a jury. But one of the facts that the government has to prove is that the individual, the defendant, knowingly violated a legal duty. Now,
right.
what the legal duty is a question of law, but whether he knowingly violated and believed that he was obligated under a legal duty is a question of fact.
Right.
And so the defendant is entitled to say, I do not believe I'm under a legal duty, and this is what I saw that made me believe that.
Right.
And so he's able to recount these things that he read, these Supreme Court cases that he studied, that caused him to conclude that he was not under a legal duty to file and pay taxes. Now, that's it sounds like it's a hair-splitting deal, but it certainly is a major fork in the road on which way the trial goes, north or south.
Right, but in Larkin Rose's case, at least, Tom, he wasn't allowed. He had written a 60, 70-page report like you. He was not allowed to introduce that. He created a video. He was not allowed to introduce that. I, as a witness, was going to talk about the fact that we had contacted some 600 H&R Block sites and asked them one question. Do you use these sections of law to determine your client's taxable domestic income? I was not allowed to complete my testimony there. So
that's right.
All kinds of information that...
But all of those items that you just listed were items that he generated or were from a third party that was not involved in the formation of his beliefs. They were merely expressions of his beliefs. Now, the evidence, though, on what caused him to come to that conclusion would have been a different thing. But you can't bring in... I can't come in and testify as to why you believe something. So when you start bringing in witnesses to testify as to what the Supreme Court said here or what the statute said there, then you're bringing in people who are testifying as to what the law is rather than as to how this defendant came to believe thus and so. I know that sounds very, very technical, but it is a technical, it's a technical process.
Well, and it's an terribly unfortunate one then, because he wasn't allowed to say, here's what I read, which led to my belief.
Well, he should have been. And if he's got an appeal, I have not read the transcript in Larkin's case or
right.
in some canon, but I have read the appellate court rulings on that. And all of those rulings were based upon the fact that these outside or external offerings of evidence were on what the law was rather than on what some canon saw and believed. And so that could be a misrepresentation of the transcript. I mean, those things have been doctored before and they'll be doctored again.
Right. But Tom, as a non-lawyer, I mean, it's pretty sickening to be in the United States of America and see that the prosecution isn't going to present. I mean, they have to show the law that a person violated, right? They're not going to go through and show, here's how you determine taxable income and here are the statutes that do it. They're not going to present those. They're just going to present the piece of it that supports their position.
That's right. And that's part of you're defining, or you're describing, rather, exactly what the country is up against and the way that our system of, quote, justice has turned into just us instead of justice. It's appalling to see the way that these things are conducted, and it's not a level playing field. The court should be, and the jury should be, a barrier between the government and the individual. The court should be holding the government to the law, and the jury should be holding the government to the facts and requiring them to prove each and every element.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the court and the government working in collusion,
mm-hmm.
And in this case, I don't. I could certainly make a case for that. I mean, I don't have any reservation in saying that the court and the DOJ are acting in collusion,
sure,
in order to secure convictions and in order to keep the truth from being aired and put out in front of God and everybody,
so that they can continue to get the $1 trillion that flows into the federal treasury every year.
Well, not only the $1 trillion, but look at what they control. You know, you mentioned that if you can't regulate it, you can't tax it. Well, taxing has always been considered a method of regulation.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the income tax, you'll find a host of things. What you can exempt or what, you know, who is and is not. Tax deductible charitable donation. What you can get deductions for. You know, in order to try to encourage or discourage certain behavior.
Yeah.
So it's, they've got, and then of course you've got the secondary
effect.
The power
effect. To tax is the power to destroy, they said, right? We got to take
right.
a quick break here, folks. We'll be right back with Tom Cryer in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
That coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
PersonalArms.com has all your self-defense needs. PersonalArms.com carries the highest quality law enforcement grade pepper spray and sells it at true wholesale prices that start at $6.95. Check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. This electronic watchdog sees through walls. Electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com/RBN. That's www.personalarms.com/RBN or call 1-201-641-1442. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning RBN when you place your online order. We will not sell items prohibited by any state, county, or local law, so check your laws before making a purchase.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA, 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. My special guest on the line with me is attorney Tom Cryer, and we are discussing the federal income tax and really starting from the Constitution and then moving to a little bit more specific criteria or details of the issue. And Tom, you were just laying out how I mean, in my view, again, how difficult it is for a defendant to go into court because, yes, he is not allowed to discuss the law, but he is theoretically allowed to discuss what led to his beliefs. And it seems like the judge has got an awful lot of discretion there in terms of coming down on either side of that issue in favor or not in favor of the defendant in defending himself. Am I wrong there?
No, the judge has a broad discretion afforded to him in making the judgment as to whether or not evidence could be confusing or could be, you know, they don't want us to be confused. You remember in Orwell's the Ministry of Truth, you know? Right. All right, so, but now let me clarify something or qualify something I said a minute ago. When I use the word collusion, I don't have any basis or any evidence to indicate that the courts and the Department of Justice sit down in a smoke-filled back room and plan any of this. But so I'm not indicating that there've been there's an active conspiracy, but the interest, the self-interest of the court to maintain their Taj Mahals and their temples of power and to maintain their stature and the funds that they rely on to do that, and the intimidating factor of the Internal Revenue Service itself on on a court it results in a de facto collusion between the two departments because both departments are fighting rather than, in other words, I just don't find that the courts have been impartial, which is what their role is.
In fact, let me read something I've read a number of times on my show, and then we have a caller here waiting patiently for us. So, Mark, we'll get to you in just a minute. But and I'll pull up the citation. I don't have it right in front of me, but I'll find it for anybody that wants it. And this is a direct quote, Tom. It says, quote, "When this court found that the Internal Revenue agents had violated the law and directed that improperly seized records were to be returned, the agents were, to say the least, not happy. The original appearance in this court by counsel for the government was, if not insolent, at least none too respectful. The brief filed following the court's adverse decision and asking for reconsideration thereof showed more than hurt feelings and came close to being worthy of a rebuke." Now it goes on. Listen to this. "More than once, the judges of a court have been indirectly reminded that they personally are taxpayers. No sophisticated person is unaware that even in this very Commonwealth," that's referring to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, "the Internal Revenue Service has been in possession of facts with respect to public officials which it has presented or shelved in order to serve what can only be called political ends, be they high or low. And a judge who knows the score is aware that every time his decisions offend the Internal Revenue Service, he is inviting close inspection of his own returns. But I suppose that no one familiar with this court believes that intimidation, direct or indirect, is effective." So there's a judge admitting that the IRS can influence them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not the only reference I've seen to that.
Right.
But yeah, now incidentally, if you would please, sir, if you would email me the citation on that, I'd appreciate it.
I will. I will definitely do that.
They are. I mean, it's just not a level playing field.
Right.
No. And I understand we're about to run out of the hour. You're going to have to hold Mark over.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, we'll be with you. Just hang with us, and folks, we'll be back here in just a minute.